This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. This is episode 266, the draft review show, as we're talking about the NFL draft, the 2020 NFL draft, and the Arizona Cardinals. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. The SB Nation, that's not true. It's the USA Today NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. Seth Cox, my co-host, is from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. His site is from SB Nation's site, family of sites covering the Arizona Cardinals as well. And goodness, we have this show is all about what the Cardinals did in the draft, who are being praised by almost all publications for a fantastic job from the A+, from my network, Touchdown Wire, to Pro Football Focus, to, you know, the lowest grade getting a B. And even then, it's not so much for what they did as to have questions of how the players are going to be used. Now, we had our mock draft last week. Seth, how'd you do on yours? I know on mine, if you want to go, it was, in some ways, it was all right. I hit a lot at the top. I had 8 players that I matched with teams, not picks, but because there didn't end up being as the trades that I predicted. So, but I had 8 players in my mock draft hit with the teams I predicted, and 24 of the 32 players that I select that I mocked in the first round actually went in the first round. But, you know, for kind of like how I like it, I pegged the Cardinals pick, and it was kind of that scenario that we talked about. I thought they would have a kind of a trade in place, and then they say no because a player like Simmons. And Kai made it sound like they had some trade calls, but when it became evident that a guy like, well, I think to Simmons and probably Derek Brown, they said, like, no, I'm not trading out of that. How'd yours turn out overall?
It wasn't too bad. I had quite a few players in the first round. The struggle became, teams and guys. I traded up with teams and took guys. I traded down with teams and took guys. So I got some guys in the right spots, just in the wrong match with the teams. But, I mean, I think it unfolded how we expected. I'm one of the few that nailed the Giants pick of Andrew Thomas. You know, you and I had talked about it. It just, I felt like Gettleman's one of those guys that he truly doesn't let anything out. And so all the talk of Tristan Wirfs just didn't match up with Gettleman's MO. And so to see him, you know, so from that, you just kind of go from there. We almost got Simmons to the Panthers, it sounded like. I mean, depending on how you want to read that tweet, it sure does sound like they thought Simmons was the best player on the board, but maybe not the best player for a young coach and a guy. Has Phil Snow coached in the NFL before? I know he's coached forever, but I don't know. I don't know. So, you know, it sounded like they were a little hesitant for that reason to pull the trigger. And instead you end up getting Simmons to Arizona. I bought the Tua falling. You bought the Tua going to Miami. So, you know, that's kind of how mock drafts work. Is you hear stuff, you kind of go with it, and Some you look really smart on. Some you're like, oh, that didn't work out so well. So it's just, you know, that's how it goes. as far as Snow goes, he's never been a DC in the NFL. He has worked in the NFL. But so, yeah, I mean, so I think overall, I think we did an okay job. And, you know, I think we actually were pretty good with what we were looking for the entire kind of process and everything.
Yeah. And well, in this show, what we're going to do is that the Cardinals had 6 draft picks. They stood pat. They didn't make any trades up or down. They picked 6 players, and we'll just talk about each individual one. We'll go down the line for each player they picked, and that's kind of how we'll go. We'll react to the pick. We'll talk about what's good, what might have been better had they done something different, and then we'll kind of go from there. So let's start off with the Isaiah Simmons pick. It happened kind of the way we needed it to happen. He was leading up to the draft. There were 2 defense, well, obviously 3. I never considered Chase Young even an option, and really not even Jeff Okuda, even though that kind of might have came through. But when it came to what I wanted for the Cardinals, it was Simmons, CeeDee Lamb, and then the offensive lineman. Now, I at one point had Tristan Wirfs ahead of Lamb, but then as we got closer to the draft, I just became more and more in love with Andrew Thomas, who ended up being the number one tackle, and after the draft, we kind of found out that he was the Cardinals' number one tackle on the board. So when Simmons fell, that was perfect. Now, my poor son Diego, if you've been following him or seeing him on Twitter, this kind of ruined the draft for him. The Cardinals didn't pick CeeDee Lamb, but Isaiah Simmons, if they weren't going to get Lamb, and it didn't sound like he was really kind of their target, I think in some scenario they would have taken him. But I think if they hadn't have landed Isaiah Simmons, they probably would have traded out of the pick. So Isaiah Simmons is the most ideal pick they could have had for a number of reasons. I'm super excited about it. I know you've expressed some reservations, but I'm super hyped about the pick. I think he, as they've been hyping it, he's everything that's as advertised. He has the mental acuity to play multiple positions and play them at a high level. He can do a lot of things. He has the athleticism. It's almost like he is, if for lack of a better comparison, he's that athletic unicorn that they believed they had many years ago in Darrell Washington. Only he's even, in my opinion, he's a more polished Darrell Washington without the off-the-field concerns, because he had those, obviously, as he burned the Cardinals multiple times. This is even better than Darrell Washington. You have a guy with the same type of, in some ways, some of the same type of measures and athletic ability, but it comes in a more much polished package, because the truth is, Simmons knows how to cover. He was a defensive back. He can cover guys well. He has great movement, and so he has coverage instincts and has moved inside and has the instincts to play the other position. I love the pick. I'm in love with the pick. I'm going to trust that the Cardinals are going to use him well. What was your initial reaction, and what's your take of your excitement level for the Cardinals and landing Simmons?
You know, my whole thing was, as long as they use him right, that's really all that matters. You know, the biggest question of all is, you know, will he be used properly to the best of his abilities, which, you know, he's described. He patterns his game after guys like Derwin James and Ty Matthew, and those are names that you and I have brought up with regards to him. That's not to say that he can't be a guy that plays linebacker, because both those guys actually do play linebacker in very, you know, varying sets. It just becomes a question of how often you're going to line him up at linebacker and let him be kind of that true inside backer. which he can do. But, you know, we've talked about this before. I think if that's what you do with him, if that ends up being who he is as a player, you're going to get 75% of what he could be. And so that's the biggest thing to me, is that when you have a talent that can be used as a multiple, as a true chess piece type, then you use it that way. You don't do what, you know, the Jaguars have done with Miles Jack. You don't do what teams have done with athletic linebackers and then just stick them in a linebacker position and go, why aren't you turning out the way you played in college? It's like, well, did you watch what I did in college, or is this just, you know? So that's my biggest concern or thought behind it. But from a player standpoint, there's not much else you can think of in terms of what the team needed on defense, and a guy who can potentially be a difference maker and be a guy that plays, you know, maybe halfway through season one, or all, you know, starting in season two, every snap of the game. And it may be he's utilized like he was at Clemson. So that is one thing I want to talk about, is when it comes to Simmons, I think people look at his versatility and go, wow, this kid is just, you know, phenomenal. And he is 100%. The thing when you look at that, though, is he's a redshirt junior, so he's not even a true junior. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. I just want to make that point clear. So he is a 20, 21, 22-year-old rookie. When you look at him coming to Clemson or coming out of Clemson, you take into consideration Clemson, right? So you go, okay, well, he was a 3-star recruit. Again, that doesn't matter, but I just want everybody to kind of have the context. So he was a 3-star recruit, and he played 274 snaps as a redshirt freshman. He played mostly as a in-the-box safety or a kind of rover safety position. That's what he did as a redshirt freshman. So his first full year of football. And remember, that was after being in the defense during practice for an entire year while he wasn't actually playing. He then became as a redshirt sophomore, so his junior year, and he played most of his snaps as like a slot defender. Now, in the ACC, you have a ton of three wides, or you flex a tight end. You don't play a ton of traditional offenses, and quite frankly, you don't in the NFL anymore. But you don't see a lot of two wide, two back stuff. So he was playing, again, more as a strong safety, but kind of as a cover guy. He played over 50% of his snaps in that. So he had 784 snaps, and 449 of those snaps were in the slot area. So, again, more of a strong safety. This was the first year where he was truly unleashed as a kind of Swiss Army knife of the defense. And I mean, we've all seen the stats, but, you know, 132 snaps as a free safety. He played 300 snaps in the box, whether that be as a linebacker or strong safety. He played 262 snaps in the slot. So he played a ton as a slot, again, corner safety type of player, and then he played 116 snaps as an edge rusher. So the guy played, you know, four positions over 100 snaps and did it super effectively, but it took 3 years to get to that point. Now, he's obviously done it, and so coming into the NFL, it'll be maybe a quicker turnaround. But the reality is he wasn't on anybody's radar as a first-round pick, let alone a top 10 pick coming into the draft or coming into the 2019 season. And it wasn't until he was utilized as what everybody is envisioning him now that he became that dynamic playmaker. So when you hear Vance Joseph talk, when you hear Steve Keim talk about him playing that weak inside linebacker position, and that's kind of the role they have picked out, there's two things we have to remember. One, they just paid Devondre Campbell basically $9 million. Six of that's guaranteed. Like, that's not money going anywhere. Trade, cut, doesn't matter. They're paying him $6 million. They really like Devondre Campbell. And two, I think what you'll see a lot of is probably, barring injury, a lot of Campbell and Hicks or a lot of Campbell and Simmons or a lot of Simmons, Kennard or Reddick, Jones, Hicks and Campbell all on the field at the same time. So you'll see a lot more five linebacker sets. And then I think you'd see more of Simmons coming into the game for Hicks than you will maybe Simmons coming into the game for a Jalen Thompson or Buda Baker. And especially more than you would, you know, Byron Murphy. I'd be shocked if that they did that at all. I wouldn't be shocked if Simmons is on the field and moves into the slot, but I would be shocked if they took Murph off the field to put Simmons in there. Again, this is all barring injury, but I think in a perfect world, you're going to see him probably, in terms of the whole season, get between 70 and 80% of the snaps available. And you'll probably see him only really playing three positions, a little strong safety, a little bit of that inside linebacker in the 34, and then a little bit of a pass rusher. I don't think you're going to see him, you know, doing as much as he did at Clemson, but I think you'll still see him doing more than 95% of players in the NFL will.
Yeah, the way – there's been a couple of different ways that people have interpreted what Vance Joseph said on Tuesday when he spoke to reporters via video call, and they said he's going to be a linebacker. Now, I want to clarify in dime. So he begins his role as a sub package linebacker, which let's be honest, that's perfect for his skill set right now. Because and we've talked about this in previous shows. In fact, this is one of the things why I thought Simmons was such a perfect fit for them this year, especially with the concerns that many have about whether Vance Joseph will use him adequately, is the fact that they already have what looks like a set starting lineup. They already have their linebacker positions filled and for the starting lineup and their defensive backfield kind of filled. And so it allows him to be a sub and to play a lot of different roles, to be Isaiah Simmons, to do what he did at Clemson, because now he can sub in as a coverage backer. He can sub in to play in the slot if specifically to cover a tight end. He could come in as an edge rusher, as a blitzer. And so I think this year it's the perfect setting. He will just become the super sub. We might not see him in base defenses. Then that's fine. And
that'll be, honestly, that would be okay. There would be nothing wrong with that because...
because Hicks is great in base against the run. And Campbell, even though, you know, that he's a production guy in the run game too.
Well, and I think the other thing is, and we have to reiterate this because it's just not normal, there's not going to be a lot of on-field off-season work. They're going to miss at least all of rookie minicamp. And you might say, well, that's just 2 weeks. But that's a lot of work. I mean, that's a lot of just learning the implementation of the defenses. So you're missing that. Then you go on, and every, you know, 2 weeks is, you know, figure 5 or 6 additional days at the office, so to speak, that he's not getting to be on the field learning. And that is the biggest thing when you're talking about a hybrid type player. You're talking about a guy who has to play with a feel just as much as he has to play with the playbook, if that makes sense. So you have to have – this guy has to know what Devondre Campbell is going to do, what Jordan Hicks is going to do, what – you know, how they see the game and how they are reacting, because he may react a different way and screw up the whole thing. And so that's the other whole piece, that with the uncertainty of this season, let alone the off season, we can't just expect him to be able to come in and be, you know, the unanimous All-American and Buckus Award-winning player that we saw at Clemson. In fact, we need to understand that he's probably going to be, what Jess said, a very important and key piece in a substitute type of role. I wrote about it with our friends, SB Nation's Clemson site, Shaking the Southland, and they asked me just that. Do you see him as a day one starter? And I just said no. I mean, unless there's an injury, they have three guys in Hicks, Buddha, and Jalen, three positions that Isaiah Simmons plays that know the defense. So he's not going to be ahead of them mentally. And then you have Devondre and Devin Kennard as the other two guys in the same position he plays. Well, you're not going to waste $13 million and 10 years of NFL experience for a rookie that really hasn't played the position, either of those positions, in a full-time role. So, you know, you can be excited about what Isaiah Simmons is going to be, but I think understanding what he likely will be as a rookie is the kind of most important thing overall, because it's not that he's going to be bad, or it's not that he's punished and sitting the bench. It's that he's going to have to learn the plays or the defensive schemes, but also how to react with his, you know, new brothers on the field and understand, hey, this is how this guy thinks. Hey, this is what this guy sees. I need to do it this way. I mean, you can't replace those things. No matter how much mental rep you do, you cannot replace those physical, just getting in sync with guys on the field. And if that's, you know, if that's not happening until training camp, then a guy like Simmons is going to be even, and not just Simmons, but all these guys are going to be even further behind, outside of maybe like a Lecky Fotu or Rashard Lawrence that we'll talk about later, where it's like, hey, just fill this gap. You know, like, all we need you to do is go forward here. Don't worry about anything else. And so that is, I think, the biggest word of caution right now is don't put your expectations that he's going to be all pro, you know, 2015.
He's not going to be Derwin James as a rookie, simply no, because he's not going to get the same amount of playing time unless he's amazing.
Well, and he won't get the same offseason, and he's not going to be 2015 Tyrann Mathieu, because he's not going to have 2 years in the system before he, you know, that's the thing, is in 2 years he could absolutely be 100% the same type of player as Derwin James or Tyrann Mathieu. But let's give the kid a chance to come in and take his lumps in a system, learn things, and learn about the NFL before we go, oh yeah, this guy is, you know, this guy. I mean, I won't say anything negative, but when I heard somebody talk about, you know, could he be the next Brian Urlacher, people, I mean, I talk about this all the time, but that stuff makes me shudder, because I mean, you're talking about one of the, 15 best players in the 2000 in the early 2000s, the first decade of the 2000s.
One of the best linebackers we've seen in our lifetime.
Right. And so that's just – I mean, that's just unfair expectations to put on a guy. And Jess and I are cautious about saying, hey, he could be Derwin James because, as Jess said, Derwin James was an all-pro as a rookie. So, like, that's how good we think he can be. But, you know, let's let him get there before we're like, oh, yeah, this is the next Lawrence Taylor. He's going to – because I heard somebody say, you know, could he be Lawrence Taylor? Let's just let him be Isaiah Simmons before we start talking about he could change the way defense is played in the NFL.
Let's think one possible scenario. So would you have rather have taken Isaiah Simmons at 7, or I mean at 8, or trade back, which I'm sure that there was the possibility to trade back with the Falcons, and then at pick number 16 – land C.D. Lamb, who ended up going number 17 to the Dallas Cowboys. They would have missed out on the offensive lineman. They would have missed out on Simmons. But would you rather have Simmons, no second-round pick, and Josh Jones in the third? Or would you have rather, or do you think it would have been more impactful to have traded back, gotten C.D. Lamb, impact receiver, have a second-round pick, and a third-round pick instead? Which that would be the only other potential for me, potential equal. Now, I was thinking getting Josh Jones in the third still and picking up someone else in the second, but you astutely noted before the show with me, had that been the case, they probably would have selected Jones in the second based on how they had their board stacked and then would have gotten a third round talent that way. So, putting it that way, I think I prefer the Simmons, although the allure of having a CD Lamb on the team still is super, super, super attractive to me.
Well, and I think it was telling too, because I think the idea of CD Lamb was there simply because that was probably the only wide receiver they were thinking about taking, because they had ample chances, especially in the fourth round where you took two down defensive linemen. Obviously they're play different positions, but you took two defensive linemen. So they had ample chances to address the wide receiver position. And I do wonder again how much not having this offseason made them go, nope, not this year. Like, it's not worth it. We're not going to you know, worry about it. Like, if we don't take CD, we're done. We're not, you know, it's not going to be a position we address this year because they're going to miss too many practices, too many things, too many walkthroughs to get it, you know, set up. I think having Lamb would have been great, but you and I talked about this a little before the show. I don't think it changes their second round pick. So you add it, and again, there's nothing wrong with this, but I think you add it and they're going to take Josh Jones at, say, 47 or whatever the Falcons picked instead of 72. So I think it gives you another player in maybe the third round. But if you kind of go through that list right there in third round, you go, okay, well, is that, I don't want that. No, not that. And so that's where you get to. The linebackers, remember, there was a run on inside backers after the Cardinals had already took Isaiah Simmons. So there was no Kenneth Murray, there was no Patrick Queen, there was no Jordan Brooks, who, you know, a guy that everybody was thinking could be a target if they did float back. And then you go back into the second round. There wasn't any real linebackers or safeties because the Patriots kind of shocked everybody and took Kyle Duggar at 37. And so now all of a sudden you're going, okay, well, I don't know if there's, you know, and Grant Delpit, who's another guy, and Antoine Winfield both went. So if you take that, you know, just that 47th pick, I just don't know if there's a guy that, I mean, maybe Willie Gay or Jeremy Chinn, but I don't know if there's a guy I'd want over the combo of Simmons and Jones.
And that's valid. That's valid, absolutely. Coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we move on to their third-round pick, Josh Jones, offensive tackle out of Houston. That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Obviously, the Cardinals, and this, I based on what we got from the draft, the Cardinals had a very productive amount of draft picks. Aside from the six picks that they used to acquire players, to select players, it's important to note how they use their draft capital. Now, granted, it's a much more, well, at least for two of those, it's an expensive draft capital, but essentially, they got Isaiah Simmons in the first with their first round pick. They acquired DeAndre Hopkins with their second round pick. They didn't have a fifth round pick in the draft, but they used two fifth round picks to acquire players. One, to acquire Kenyon Drake in the trade last year, which they've re-signed this year. So basically, it looks like for that fifth round pick, you got a season and a half at least of Kenyon Drake. And then with the other one, their original fifth round pick, they used that in the supplemental draft last year to land Jalen Thompson. And so technically with a second round and two fifth round picks, they have already used those picks on starters. We're not going to talk about this, so it was a productive draft aside from that. But in the third round, and I remember this, is as the draft is coming down, the Cardinals didn't have a pick in the second round, so we're waiting, 39 picks before the Cardinals make their selection. And then they end up with Josh Jones, a guy that I think we both had going in the first round of the draft, a guy that the Cardinals ranked in their top 30, so clearly a first round ish talent that they had on their board, and he falls all the way to pick number 72 for whatever reason. They land him, and it at this point, it feels like the draft could not have gone any better. They got the top defensive player that you could have gotten, the best fit for everything that they have problems with, and now you land a starter caliber tackle in Josh Jones, who might not be the starter this year, probably won't be the starter this year, but could be a starter either at right or left tackle moving forward, and as if you have said, was your favorite tackle in this draft, and they did it in the third round. I couldn't believe it. Could you believe that it happened?
No, I can't. And it's one of those things where you sat there and you go, what did I miss? And not, you know, the sense that, you know, I'm always right or I'm hardly right or anything of that nature. But usually you look at things and you go, okay, I'm missing something. Because why is this guy who's, you know, who's great, has a chance to be great, why is he falling? Like, it just doesn't make sense. And I talked to some people that I trust and you know, asked them, is there an injury I'm missing? Like, what's something, you know, am I missing something on this kid that I just, you know, overlooked in a report, you know, things of that nature. And everybody's like, no, we don't get it either. Like, it doesn't make any sense why he's falling this far. I mean, so that makes you feel better because you're like, okay, I mean, definitely could be missing something still, but it's not like an obvious thing like, oh yeah, he was arrested three times, you know, or something like that.
The only thing that comes up is maybe it's because he only played nine games in 2019, but this is not the to be kept now. This is not the fall of Dorian Johnson to the fourth round, who had athletic red flags and then a major medical red flag. This is a guy that, heavens, this looks like it just fell. Like, if we're going to quote Dennis Green for Matt Leinart, a gift from heaven is kind of what this was.
Well, and it's ironic for me at least, because the guy that I've been comparing him to this entire time fell to the third round. Actually went pick 75, so three picks later. And that's Teron Armstead. And it's a similar kind of background. You're talking about a guy who played – now, Armstead played at a small school. He didn't play at Houston. He played at a small school. Now, he ran a bit better in the 40 than Josh Jones did. But you look at kind of their height, weight, reach, kind of body build, all of those things. They are similar in those aspects. And there was question about competition and refinement in the pass game. And you look back at that, and you see that sometimes guys just need technique work. They come out and they have the skills, but they don't have the NFL technique. And so it's one of those things. It's like, we can't teach this kid's feet. We can't teach this kid's hands. I mean, if you go watch him at the Senior Bowl, it's one-on-one drills, so don't put a ton of stock into it. But they one-on-one drills are typically in place for the defensive players, because you don't have the ability to know, kind of what your slide protection is. If you're having help, you don't know where the route's going, if it's quick, all of those things. So it's just one of those situations where he was burying guys. I mean, he wasn't just blocking them. He was getting into them and then burying them on the ground. And so you go kind of watch the film, you see the same thing. Go watch his game against Oklahoma. And that's kind of what solidified it for me, is that it wasn't just that he was good. It was like he was the best player on the field when Houston was on offense. And so you're talking about Kenneth Murray. You're talking about Neville Gallimore. I mean, you're talking about multiple NFL draft picks he's going up against and having to block. And he's doing a great job, not a good job. And so I definitely understand the competition concerns, but when guys play out in that level, in that game, and they have that, and then you combine it with the kind of agility, that basketball background, footwork, and those heavy hands that you see on him, and it's just, yeah, I mean, getting him at 72 could be a steal, to the point where you're like, you don't have to worry about who your tackles are for the next 3 years.
I love the description that I heard. I think it was on the Steve Keim interview with SiriusXM Radio, and what one of the coaches described Jones as: he's got quiet feet and loud hands. Like, apparently, well, what I love in particular is the what we see in a lot of offensive linemen coming out, is they don't have the polished pass protection. Like Mekhi Becton, who didn't have a ton of true pass sets. This offense, they pass a lot. It's very similar to what the Cardinals are going to do. And so you see him with a tremendous punch. You hit with tremendously strong hands and good feet in pass sets, which will help him transition very quickly to the NFL. The one concern, obviously, he only played left tackle at Houston. And if he's going to play, at least right now, he's going to have to play right tackle. And he wants to start, and I think a lot of fans believe he can start or should start. I'm telling you, it's probably 2021 unless there's an injury. I mean, because the Cardinals do really the coaching staff is very high on Marcus Gilbert, and also they believe in Justin Murray.
Yeah, and that's okay, because and I try not to go back to this, but you go back to Armstead, and what you see with Armstead was he only started, I think, six games as a rookie, and again, that was injury based, and then he kind of never looked back. He had one season where he got injured, but you're talking about a guy that's been to two Pro Bowls, that's, you know, been an All-Pro, that has had a really good career, got a huge second contract already. And I see a lot of the similarities in their ability. And I see a lot of similarities in how they go about their business and how they play the game. So I'm excited for Jones. I think he's going to be a guy that is counted on for a long time for the Cardinals, and he's going to end up being a really, you know, good pick.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We will move on to the fourth round and talk about the first fourth round pick being defensive tackle Leki Fotu. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea-Red. We're back on the Rise of the Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Next up in the draft is defensive tackle, big, huge nose tackle, Leki Fotu. I will say, though, I am super high on this. He was one of my day three players on my wish list. I wanted them to pick him because I believe there's more to him than what he played in college. And even what he did in college is really fantastic. He played on a very physical and effective defense of Utah, and he is built like a traditional nose tackle that you can plug in, play two downs, but he's also got some athleticism and some quickness to him that allows him to do more. And as we talked about leading up to the draft, the potential of them drafting a Derrick Brown in the first round with the eighth overall pick, and kind of what he profiles out to potentially be in the NFL. Here I've been thinking, why draft Derrick Brown in the first round? If you like Derrick Brown in the first round, then Leki Fotu in the third round would be an absolute steal. And for me, the fact they got him in the fourth round, that's even more of a steal. I'm not expecting him to be a star, but I do really, really like the player, I like the fit, and I like the potential.
Yeah, and Fotu's a guy that you need on your defense. He's a guy that gives you kind of an anchor nose tackle in the middle of a defense. He's a guy that can two gap, which is so important in the 34, because that's the main thing that keeps linebackers clean to run and chase. And, you know, if you're going to talk about a guy like Devondre Campbell, his best attribute is his ability to run and chase. And so getting a guy like Fotu can just enhance a guy like Campbell's ability and make him an even better player. You know, obviously it'll do that for a guy like Jordan Hicks too, but Hicks is more of a traditional understands angles type of linebacker. You know, and he had a nice year without the help of a giant up front. So it could just make Hicks' game even better. He's not a guy that's going to rush the passer. It's not a guy that you're going to ask to rush the passer, but he's a guy that's going to get two sacks a season. He's a guy that's going to, you know, play 40 to 50% of the snaps. And he's a guy that's going to give you, 100% every one of those 40 to 50 snaps. I really like the high end comp for him as an A'shaun Robinson type player. We've seen, you know, those guys get drafted much earlier than what the Cardinals drafted Fotu, as Jess alluded to. I mean, when you're saying, hey, I'll take this guy here, and then you're like, oh yeah, I definitely take him here, then it makes it a lot easier. He's not, like I said, he's not going to be the type of guy that plays every down. He's probably not going to play a ton. But if he's a guy that plays, you know, 40 to 50 snaps a game as a rookie, and then maybe gets up to 50 to 60 snaps a game, throughout his career. And if he maxes out at 55% of the snaps, that's really good because, one, that means the Cardinals are doing enough to keep teams honest, and two, he's improving enough to stay on the field for a longer time. So when you look at it, you've got a, you know, a high-end comparison to, like I said, like a A'shaun Robinson type of guy. You know, if he doesn't work out, it'll be simple things like he just wasn't able, despite him being incredibly strong, he wasn't able to be that, you know, anchor of the defense that they needed him to be. I don't think that'll be a problem. Utah's defense was
for me, for him to be a success. The truth is, all he needs to do to be a great pick in the fourth round, finish his contract. If he plays out the 4 years of his contract and then moves on somewhere else, they have hit on that pick. He doesn't have to be a star. Now, Steve Keim used Vita Vea as the guy that they see a little bit in. Now, Vita Vea was a top 15 pick in the draft by Tampa Bay 2 years ago. He's been fairly productive, but he's been fairly productive. He's given a little bit of upside in terms of sacks. He's got 5 sacks a couple years, 16 QB hits. Fotu doesn't have to be that. There is the potential, and I believe that, and just like he believes, and Keim believes, there's a little bit of untapped potential there because of what he was asked to do. Because of his size and girth and strength, all they needed him to do at Utah is to do what he did, is to one gap and just occupy blockers and keep linebackers clean. The Cardinals can do that, and that'd be a great thing. In fact, if he can be good enough as a nose tackle to start as a rookie, and I think there's a possibility of that, where you push Corey Peters off to one of the other end positions, and you have this defensive line of Jordan Phillips and Leckie Fotu next to one another in base sets with Corey Peters, who is a very skilled player, that is one hulking defensive line right there up front, that you're going to have the interior right with the center and the left guard dealing with 670 pounds of strength and quickness, which is really appealing. But if at minimum, if he's just a two-down player that they keep around for 4 years, he has more than met the expectation that you would have of any fourth-round pick.
Yeah, and that's, like you said, that's all you're looking for out of him. He's to be a guy that is consistently getting playing time and consistently being a guy that is in the rotation for 4 seasons. Anything after that is, you know, is, I guess, just the cherry on top.
Right. I mean, what they got out of Rodney Gunter, you can't, like, they even brought him back for an extra year. Well, you got 5 years for Rodney Gunter. You have to be pleased with that draft pick that they made in the fourth round. He was a success. He wasn't a star. He had a pretty solid 2018, and he turned that into a nice 3-year deal in Jacksonville. Congrats to him. Congrats to the Cardinals on picking a player like Gunter out of Delaware State that no one had heard of. I remember when they drafted him. We're like, who? We had no information on him. And so that's the now. Fotu's, it comes from a big school, big program. I love it. So he's one of, so when you go with the first 3 picks that the Cardinals made, me, based on what I was hoping to get out of the draft, those 3 players, Simmons, Jones, and Fotu, I was overjoyed with those picks. After that, it didn't really matter almost what they did, because day 3 picks are like, eh. It doesn't really matter what you do with them. You hope they do something. And there's still more to that. So coming up next on the Rise of Secret podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to talk about their next fourth-round pick, another defensive lineman, Rashard Lawrence from LSU. That's coming up next on Rise of Secret. We're back on the Rise of Secret podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. It was a surprise to me when they picked Fotu in the early fourth, and they doubled down on the defensive line, picking up LSU defensive lineman, played kind of more nose, I think he played in LSU, but he's versatile. Rashard Lawrence three-year captain. This is hard to do. He comes from an alpha dog program in LSU, one of the best programs in college football, on a team where they had every draft-eligible player either get drafted or signed. You had five first-round picks, and this was a guy, he was the alpha male in the defensive locker room. He was a three-year captain, so from sophomore, junior, senior, he was a captain for 3 years on a big-time program. Ed Orgeron, their LSU head coach, he cut his teeth as a defensive line coach. He loved Rashard Lawrence. They stumped for him. They kept talking to the Cardinals about him because Vance Joseph's brother is the O-line coach there at LSU, so they had some connections there. And Vance knows Ed Orgeron. And so he's a guy that they're actually super excited about. In terms of what he brings to the NFL, there's not a lot of measurables to love. There's not a huge production to love. But in terms of what they bring to the locker room, I think he's going to be he's the perfect defensive lineman to have in your rotation on any team.
Yeah, so he was a right defensive end at LSU. So, a position that the Cardinals do need depth on. I'm not going to say that they need a starter on by any means, but a guy that they need depth with. And so when you look at it, and again, you and I kind of talked about this off the air, you look at it, and if their defensive front, three going into the season is Phillips, Peters, and Zach Allen, last year's third-round pick, and then their backups are Rashard Lawrence, Leki Fotu, and Jonathan Bullard, and then you keep one of Miles Brown or Michael Dogby, that's a really nice seven-man rotation. I don't think they'll keep more than eight unless an injury pops up somewhere. But, I think that would be a nice seven-man rotation. It gives you your top six where you could probably feel pretty comfortable getting Phillips and Allen to at 60% of the snaps. And then, you get Peters and Fotu at 40, percent of the snaps each. And then you get, you figure out how to use Lawrence and maybe Dogby or Brown, like I said. So Lawrence is a guy that I don't know if you know this, but he was a five-star recruit coming into LSU. So he was a highly sought-after guy. And then he just kind of never improved. And I don't want to say improved because he was consistently good, but
he never was a star. He never was a stud in terms of play.
Right, and so his best year was definitely his junior year, where I think he had quite a few. I think he had his highest number of sacks and tackles for loss. He also four sacks on that season. He also won defensive MVP in their bowl game. So he was a guy that a lot was expected, rotational guys, a freshman, and then started to get some reps, steady reps as a sophomore, junior, and senior. And then his production really, really dipped this year. A lot of that was they were rushing the passer a lot more, and that's not his forte. And a lot of it was he's dealt with some lower body injuries that he's trying to overcome. I believe he's got like a patella issue, and then I think an Achilles. Don't exactly quote me on the specific body parts, but I think that's what I read. So you look at it, he's a guy that is kind of your 20 to 25 snap a game guy. He's your guy that you plug in and you don't worry when he's in because he's not going to hurt you, but he's not a guy that's going to come in and and make a ton of plays. He's a really good two-gap guy that if he gets healthy and then learns to use his legs, and I truly believe if you look at a lot of the things you hear about him, it talks about his leverage and that he doesn't use his legs enough. And I truly do believe that a lot of that is because of the injuries he's dealt with. If he gets in the NFL, trust his legs, he could be a guy that, like you said, has a very kind of long career. Maybe he's never, you know, a starter or even like an all-pro type, but he's a guy that you have on your team for 5 or 6 years because you know what he brings and you know that he's not going to hurt you. I told you this, that, you know, his high-end comp out is to a guy that was actually drafted in the first round, Sylvester Williams, who's been in the league for a long time now. He was with the Broncos, won a Super Bowl with them, played in Tennessee, played in Detroit, played in Miami, now is with the LA Chargers. You know, but you go and look at his numbers, and it's really actually crazy to see. In Williams' entire career, the highest amount of snaps he played was 56% of the snaps. He has one season over 50% snaps played. He has a season at 49, and then the rest of his time it's 25 to 40% of the snaps. So that's what I see of Lawrence kind of being his high-end potential. And that's not a shot. That's a really important cog in the NFL defensive line. It's just not a guy that's going to be a a wrecker or a guy that's going to be the type of, hey, we're going to let you play 70 snaps a game. That's just not who he is. And that's okay, because if he gives you those, you know, 20 to 25 snaps a game, I think this is going to be a really good pick for the team.
He's another guy in that case is he's a successful pick if he finishes his contract. And both Fotu and Lawrence, I think they both have the skill set to be solid enough players for a four-year time period, especially if the coaching staff stays stable.
Consistent, yeah.
If they play out their contract, I think you go and say, yeah, those picks were good picks. Coming next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, we move on to the sixth round where they pick up an intense linebacker, Evan Weaver, out of Cal. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Their sixth-round pick, I'll be honest, it surprised me. But it shouldn't have surprised me because he was a guy I knew they liked. They pick up California, Cal Berkeley's Evan Weaver, Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. And he is kind of the anti-Isaiah Simmons, but he's a type of linebacker I bet every coach would love to have on his team. He's more athletic than you'd think if you look at him. And my goodness, does he like to hit people. And my goodness, he has a lot of production.
Yeah, and he's a guy that you just look at the numbers and you're like, holy cow, those are insane. And you know, I'm one of those guys that I give the – you know, I like to use more than just the eye test. I think the eye test is very important when you watch players, but I like to say, hey, let's look at their metrics. What did they do testing wise? Because there was a comp being thrown around for Weaver throughout the process that I just didn't get, and that was Scooby Wright out of U of A. Scooby was a ultra productive 1 year wonder at U of A. He was, you know, a freshman. He had 83 tackles, which is really good, and 9 tackles for loss. And then in his second year, his sophomore year, he put up absurd numbers, 164 tackles, 31 for loss, 15 sacks. And everybody's like, holy cow, this guy is, you know, this guy is the next player. I mean, he finished ninth in the 2014 Heisman voting, which is just insanity. And so then he had dealt with injuries, ineffectiveness as a junior, came out, you know, drafted in the seventh round. We all know the story. Weaver, I mean, he never totaled those sack numbers and tackle for loss numbers, which, by the way, are completely fake. But he never totaled those. But what he did do was he got better every single year. His junior year, he put up 155 tackles, 8.5 for loss, 4.5 sacks, had 2 interceptions. And then in his senior year, he had 181 tackles, 11.5 for loss, 2.5 sacks, and forced 2 fumbles. He became kind of this yeoman defensive player at Cal and became a guy that was so dynamic that he won the, like you said, the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. And you look at his testing numbers, and the one kind of thing about Scooby was his testing numbers were awful. And I mean that in the most sincere way possible. They were awful. The only thing Scooby did around average was bench press at 22 reps. And that was still slightly below at 49th percentile. So, I mean, we'll give him average. And so you look at those numbers. Scooby was a slug running. He was awful in his 20-yard shuttle. And then you look at Evan Weaver's numbers. About the same weight. Scooby was about 6 pounds heavier, but Evan tested better. He was above average, slightly above average in the broad jump. He was good in the 3-cone, and he was really good in the 20-yard shuttle. So you're talking about a guy that plays inside linebacker and is really good in the short area when it comes to quickness, reacting, and tracking and making plays. He's not a guy that is going to be, Brian Urlacher. He's not going to be, you know, any of those great linebackers. But what he is going to potentially become is a guy like Nick Kwiatkowski, who just signed a big deal with the Las Vegas Raiders and played with the Chicago Bears for 4 years. Kwiatkowski was a special teams guy early in his career. And then as he got better and he became more reliable on defense, he became a guy that was playing a lot of defensive snaps. That's the biggest thing is, you know, I think Weaver can become that same type of player. He can become a guy that is a special teams ace and also a contributor on the defensive side of the ball, especially in rundowns. I mean, he may be a guy that you can pair up with Isaiah Simmons and you don't worry about him having to do a ton of the running athletic stuff, but he'll be a guy that can take on blocks. He can be the more prototypical inside backer and replace maybe the Jordan Hicks production in a year or two if the Cardinals wanted to go in that direction. Obviously, that's if everything goes right and he hits his high-end comp. If not, I think you put it nicely, he's similar to Joe Walker in that he is a really good special teamer that, again, like Rashard Lawrence, barring injury concerns, and now Lawrence already has those concerns, but Weaver doesn't. But so barring injury concerns, he's a guy that's going to be in the NFL for, 7, 8, 9 years. Just depends on, is he a guy that's going to be contributing on defense, or is he going to continue to be, a special teams ace and a rotational, 100 snap a year guy at the linebacker position.
Right. If you look at Joe Walker, athletically, they are similar. But if you look at their college careers, Walker was not nearly as productive when he was at Oregon. And he's stuck in the league. The Cardinals obviously had him in the starting lineup, and he did a job. He wasn't bad, but he's the type of player you can stick in the starting lineup and get production. He's not going to be ideal. So I think as a low end, I think Weaver's going to be at least what Joe Walker is in his career, with the potential to be a solid starter with some athletic limitations. Obviously, not every linebacker is going to be Isaiah Simmons. Isaiah Simmons is a unicorn. Let's make that very clear. He's a unicorn in terms of his skill set. Right. Evan Weaver is like a lot of linebackers, and his ability to diagnose plays and close quickly and be incredibly physical. And in terms of mentality, this guy is never turned off. He is always football on. The switch is always on. Like, Keim even used the quote that Bruce Arians would use. You know, he'd rather tell him whoa than sick him. When they met him at, I can't remember if it's the combine or the senior, but when they met him for the first time, they're like, whoa. Because he walks in and he's ready to hit people. He's ready to tackle people. And the quote, he says, he wants to hit them. So, you know, knock their soul out of them. I think it's not the exact quote, but he wants to knock the souls out of people. Basically, he wants to make offensive players miserable. And that is what you're going to... And the good thing is, coming into, you know he's going to be great on special teams. And so you pair him with a Dennis Gardeck, a similar type of player in terms of physicality, only guess what? Weaver did it at a big school in a big conference and was incredibly productive. Gardeck did the same type of thing. He's got the same mentality, but it's Sioux Falls. And he's a great special teamer. And so you're going to have two guys incredibly competitive. They are going to be beasts together on special teams. And you have high-end starter potential in Weaver. There's nothing to dislike about that pick unless you say, hey, they should have gone with a different position. In terms of talent, I love it.
Yeah, and there's really not much you can complain about. I think you hit it on the head. He's a guy that, you know, when you talk about safe picks, a guy playing out his 4 years, he's the type of guy you're talking about.
Cardinals are the C's, Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk of the way. We will wrap up this edition of the show talking about the final draft pick, Eno Benjamin. It's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Seventh round rolls around, and honestly, I could not believe it. One of my favorite players. I'm an Arizona State fan, unabashedly. I graduated twice from there, got my bachelor's and my master's from there. I've been a season ticket holder since 2007. I've gone to almost every single home game in the last 13 years. And Eno Benjamin is one of my favorite players. Now, he kept falling in the draft, and we were hoping maybe they should pick him up in the sixth round, and they didn't. I didn't think the Cardinals would then pick him in the seventh round because they didn't pick him in the sixth round. I thought they would go with a defensive back with special team, an athletic DB with special teams implications. But instead, they land Benjamin, a player you will love to watch. I was thrilled with the pick, and what's nice about it is that he does have a skill set that you will like to see in this offense, because there's in terms of running back skills, he can do it all. He can move the pile. He has very good explosiveness. His decision making, if you watch some of the tape, it's not the best. Like, sometimes he gets a little stutter step instead of hitting the foot down on the grass and cutting and going. But he's got a great spin move. He always seems to move forward. He can catch the ball. He's very good at that, and he's a very willing and able blocker. So there's really no holes to his game at all. And so you get that in the seventh round, a guy that who was a workhorse in college. And aside from being a Sun Devil fan, I love the pick, but I think it's a good fit, especially since the Cardinals wanted to add a third running back. And say what you will about DJ Foster, the Cardinals, you know, both Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim, anytime they talk about the running backs, they never mention DJ Foster. So just understand, DJ Foster, nice player, local kid, ASU guy, he's a special teams player, and they only see him as such. Steve Keim believes that with Eno Benjamin, they have their third running back that they can use in the offense if they need. Kind of like the situation when they're in last year, towards the end of the year, where they had David Johnson, Kenyon Drake, and Chase Edmonds. They liked it that way, and Eno gives them that flexibility to be able to do lots of different things on offense with him.
Yeah, and he's a guy that, you know, there are limitations to his game, and that's okay. I mean, he's smaller at 5'9", 207, but he's well put together. Like you said, explosiveness is the name of his game. He's not a burner by any means. He's not a grinder by any means, but he's a guy that understands how to work in the running game. He's a guy that, you know, understands where he needs to go to get his yards. He can over kind of think his ability sometime and try to make plays that aren't there. But, you know, when you're a system running back, I think that's the biggest thing that you have to understand is there are times when 2 yards are better than -3 yards. And that might sound stupid, but too many guys – and I'm not just talking about Eno, but too many guys go, oh, well, I can definitely beat all these guys to the outside. And then you're like, oh, wait, I'm playing against, you know, guys with similar athletic traits to me. That's why, you know, we were talking about Evan Weaver, and I told you this off the air. Evan Weaver had a better shuttle time than Eno. So if Eno has to stop and start, guess who's just as athletic? Evan Weaver. You know what I'm saying? So that's how that works. And so that's going to be Eno's biggest thing is learning to take what is there for you and understand that getting 4 yards on a play that's blocked for 2 is really good. Getting 10 yards on a play that's blocked that should be a touchdown is not good. And that's what you have to be as a runner. You have to see the lanes. You have to have the vision. Eno has that. He just doesn't have any – he just doesn't have any elite traits that say, hey, I'm going to take this guy over another running back. And so that's where the problem comes in for Eno versus other guys is that, you know, like I said, at 5'9", 207, that's an undersized back. I truly do believe that that weight actually hurt him because I think he would have probably tested even better in his 3-cone and short shuttle and his 40 if he wasn't carrying that 207 weight there. you know, the other thing is he's dealt with some fumble issues and he's got tiny, tiny hands. So those are the big concerns with Eno. But, you know, and I've said this, I think he really compares nicely to a guy like Duke Johnson, who's with the Houston Texans, who's been in the league for, I think, 6 years now, has been incredibly productive. You know, I was writing about it because I wrote up, you know, a scouting report on all these guys. And, you know, when I talked about Duke Johnson, you know, some people take offense to that and they go, oh, man, you know, Eno's going to be better than that. Look at him, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, Duke Johnson averages 6.5 yards per touch. He gets 55 yards per game as a guy that only gets 9 touches a game. So he gets the ball 9 times a game, and he basically is a guarantee of 7 yards every time he touches the ball, whether it's running or receiving. That's a big, you know, deal. And that is a player that is not only going to make a roster, but stay on rosters for a long time because, you know, they're called third down backs, but what they are guys that have a talent that and a knack for creating plays. They're not going to be a bell cow, and that's going to be okay because not everybody can be a bell cow. And if he is a bell cow, that means, you know, he was one of the guys that was overlooked because of his physical limitations. And that happens all the time. And, you know, that's not a bad thing. So this team, I think in general, had a really nice draft because they were able to get a number of pieces that they needed, one, and then they were able to get a number of pieces, two, that fit how the team wants to work, whether it's the defensive line rotation and getting a guy like Rashard Lawrence, who maybe isn't great in terms of name or in terms of, you know, skill set that he provides, but he'll fit into the system as a rotational guy and give you those 20 to 25 snaps. Eno's the same thing. And I think your point about his pass blocking ability is kind of understated, especially for a third down back. Because if you're a third down back, your only job isn't just to go out there and get the ball when you're in there. You have to be able to chip. You have to be able to pick up blitzers. Eno's an incredibly smart kid. He graduated in 3 years from ASU. My mother-in-law is an employee at ASU and wanted to remind me that he didn't just graduate in independent studies or whatever most athletes graduate.
Kinesiology.
Yeah. He was a guy that actually has a serious major. And I believe he has a minor in something as well. And he graduated in 3 years. He's an incredibly intelligent kid. He's, like you said, he's going to endear himself to the team. And I think he can become an effective third down back that gets, you know, that is able to play, you know, 25 to 30 snaps a game and get, you know, on a third of those snaps, get touches and be incredibly productive. I'm not going to say he's going to be a 7 yard per touch guy. That's unfair, but that's the type of ability he has. And if he's able to get there, then the Cardinals, like you said, in the seventh round, if, and now obviously this is all looking at everything Pollyanna, rose colored glasses, but we're Cardinals fans. And, you know, especially right now after the draft, that's the way you want to look at things. And so if you're able to get, you know, a guy, you know, your first two picks, you're able to get two perennial Pro Bowl type players. You know, Lucky Fotu becomes that A'shaun Robinson kind of anchor in the middle of the defense. If Rashard Lawrence can be a Sylvester Williams, if Evan Weaver can be a Nick Kwiatkowski, and if, you know, Eno can be a Duke Johnson, that's a great draft. And we know that's not going to happen. I mean, all six of these guys are not going to reach their potential high end. It's just, it's the NFL. That happens. You end up being the Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson, Richard Sherman, you know, or was it Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner draft. And that's, you know, those are franchise changing. And maybe this will be a franchise changing draft. And we'll look on this back in 5 years and you'll say, see, Seth, you're wrong. All six of them did reach their high end potential, but those are the types of players they drafted. And that is what their high end potential could be. And I think that has to be exciting for fans to see something where all of these guys actually do have, you know, not just like special teams upside or this or that, but they have productive contributing upside to their game.
That's the one thing, at least the one thing with Eno that I hope he, and I don't doubt that he will do it. I mean, DJ Foster became that in the league. DJ Foster was not a special teams ace in college. He did things in the return game. He was very versatile. Eno will have to find his niche on special teams as well, but I think he's got the mentality to do it. Now, the Cardinals also announced 21 undrafted rookie free agents additions to the team. We're not going to go through all the names, but there are three names that Cardinals fans should probably know about based on what Steve Kine said. He brought up two names, and then there's a name that Seth said that he's been told about. So here are the three names to know. There is one, the receiver out of Hawaii, JoJo Ward. He's got a little Damier Bird to him. He didn't have the blazing speed that Damier had, but he's smaller. He put up big plays, and Steve Kime mentioned him as a guy that you like what he has in the vertical game. Seth will talk a little bit more, but then the second guy is the Air Force cornerback, Zane Lewis. He's the guy that they paid the most of their bonus money that they're allotted. I think they're allotted, I don't know what the exact number is now. It was like $96,000. They were allowed to pay their undrafted rookies in and signing bonus. And I believe they paid him $20,000 of that. He's a guy that they like. He's got some size. So he's also the one that – the other one that Kai mentioned in an interview on the radio recently. So JoJo Ward, Zane Lewis, and who's the other guy? Seth, you can kind of talk about the two players a little bit more.
Yeah, Bajor Wilson out of Liberty is the last guy that a couple people have reached out to me about that they really liked coming out of Liberty. So, again, Liberty University, or is it University of Liberty? I'm not sure. But so we'll start with Bajor because he's not the one that Steve mentioned, so he's one that was passed along to me. Dude is tiny. Not tiny, but lean, 5'10", 170. So he but he's super aggressive, and I talked about it. He's a 4-4 guy. He plays with physicality. He plays with a chip on his shoulder. He plays with this attitude and almost arrogance that you need as a cornerback. He is really fun to watch, a guy that just is not afraid to stick his nose in and go after people. Bajor Wilson, interesting name to remember, cornerback. You know, the Cardinals did not address the cornerback position in free agency or in the draft. So, you know, there will be at least one move made, you would expect, this offseason. And so, you know, just remember Bajor. JoJo Ward, you talked about it. Damier Bird, he doesn't have the 4.2 speed, but he is a low 4.4 guy. I believe he is 5'9 and 170 pounds is what they have him listed at. I just want to double check, make sure I'm not. No, 5'9", 175, sorry. I sold him short 5 pounds. So 5'9", 175. Ultra productive, big play guy out of Hawaii. Now, one thing that is always important when you talk about Hawaii is you take all of their statistics with a grain of salt, because they throw the ball a lot. I mean, they make Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech look run heavy. So they like to throw the ball. But the way they used JoJo was on the outside as kind of the deep threat guy. He's got a very smooth stride about him. If you watch him run, it's not that he looks slow. It just doesn't look like he's exerting any energy to get up to top speed. So it's an easy 4-4. He's a guy that ran past defensive backs with ease and made plays. Watch the Oregon State game if you really want like a taste of who he is as a player. But he's an interesting guy. I think he's got an interesting chance to play or to make the roster. Again, that Oregon State game, 10 catches, 189 yards, 4 touchdowns. So very good at the deep football stuff. And then the Air Force kid, Zane Lewis, interesting kid because a lot bigger than most cornerback prospects. He is a little bit soft, and I don't like saying that about guys, but he doesn't play as physical as you would expect for a guy of his size at 6'1", 190 pounds. So I'm interested to see if he's going to be a guy that is willing to stick his nose in there in special teams. He is really smooth in his game. He's a cousin to a former NFL All-Pro, maybe All-Pro, but definitely Pro Bowl cornerback Sean Springs. So you would assume he's gotten some heads up on the way to play the defensive back position and how to play in the NFL. good ball player. I think he could potentially stick around in Arizona because, like I said, he's a guy that is really good at making plays on the ball and dropping into coverage. So I think he could be, you know, a guy to watch as well. My favorite of the is Bajor. Just the physicality. I tend to gravitate towards players that play reckless almost. That's just how I like to see these guys play.
Now, that'll wrap up this edition of the show. We will be back. I'm not sure if we'll come back next week or in a couple of weeks as we now hit kind of a dead time. It depends on what we have coming up in the news cycle. This will wrap up this edition of the show 266, our draft review. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening as always. We'll be back soon. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up! Rise! Rise!